Gaza tops 33,300. The Iranian president says ending Israeli genocide and crimes against humanity in Gaza is a human and religious duty for all Muslim countries. And defying the rising opposition to Britain's weapons exports to Israel amid the Gaza genocide, London says it will not halt its arms sales to the regime. Palestinians continue to face endless nightmare of death and destruction in Gaza, where a U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide is now in its seventh month. Israeli aircraft and artillery continue pounding various parts of Gaza, targeting homes and gatherings of displaced people. In the latest Israeli airstrikes, at least 14 civilians were killed in the Nusayrat refugee camp of central Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry says 153 civilians were killed and 60 injured throughout the besieged enclave in the past 24 hours. Meanwhile, civil defense workers say they've recovered the bodies of 409 Palestinians from Al-Shifa Medical Complex in the north and the city of Khan Yunis to the south. Operations were made possible after Israeli forces pulled out from the southern city and ended their siege on the hospital. Since the start of U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Gaza, over 33,300 Palestinians have so far been killed. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musaba joined us earlier from the central city of Deir al-Balah with an update.
Some 153 Palestinian civilians were killed over the last 24 hours, in addition to 180 Palestinian civilians, others were injured over that time period. According to the spokesperson of Gaza's civil defense system in Gaza City, that they have succeeded to extract at least 409 Palestinian dead bodies from the rubble of the destroyed houses in the vicinity of the Al-Shifa Medical Complex. And when it comes to Khan Yunis City, as you know, that after the Israeli occupation forces withdrew from Khan Yunis City, more dead bodies are being extracted every moment. This actually what explains the high number of the dead bodies that are still trapped and missing under the rubble of those destroyed houses. So it's highly expected, as I've mentioned, for these numbers to rise incrementally, according to the spokesperson of the Gaza self-defense system, that they lack the needed equipment and the tools needed to help to evacuate the dead bodies. Still this moment, there is no significant change in terms of the humanitarian supplies allowed to enter into Gaza Strip, despite the reports that are still saying that the Israeli occupation forces increased and raised the number of the humanitarian trucks allowed into Gaza Strip.
Iraqi Islamic Resistance Group says it's launched a new retaliatory attack against Israeli targets in occupied territories in response to ongoing genocidal war on Gaza. The resistance group announced it launched an operation against oil port city of Haifa with two drones. Group added attacks carried out retaliation for the regime's massacre of Palestinians, including the children, women, and elderly, and it emphasized such strikes will continue against Israeli positions. The groups recently conducted several attacks targeting the oil port city of Haifa. It's also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza. The United Nations Deputy Secretary General has expressed deep concern over the humanitarian situation in Gaza. Amina Mohammed said in a UN press conference, the international community has lost its moral compass in Gaza. She warned thousands of children continue to be killed and maimed due to Israel's campaign of genocide. Top UN official called for immediate action on the humanitarian situation. Earlier, the UN chief himself, Antonio Guterres, urged humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza, and that, as a report by the UN stated, that more children have perished in Israel's war on Gaza than in over 4 years of all conflicts worldwide. Israel has faced tremendous international pressure to end its genocidal war in Gaza and allow more humanitarian aid into the starving territory. And now the UN says Israel is blocking far more convoys carrying food in Gaza than convoys carrying other forms of humanitarian assistance.
UN-coordinated food deliveries are much more likely to be impeded or denied access to areas requiring coordination within Gaza than any other humanitarian mission. So this is bureaucratic language for the fact that food convoys that should be going particularly to the north, where 70% of people face famine conditions, are more likely, actually three times more likely to be denied than any other humanitarian convoy with other kinds of material. And when you put up statistics with numbers of trucks going in, saying, look at all these hundreds of trucks going in, and you put it against, look how few trucks have actually moved around with the distribution. Well, it's kind of an own goal, isn't it? Because half of the convoys that we were trying to send to the north with food were denied by the very same Israeli authority. There are opening hours at these crossings. What often happens is that things move across from Israel into Gaza, and then they sleep overnight because it's not open anymore for the Gaza side to come in and pick up trucks.
Yeah, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has a proposal made in the latest round of ceasefire talks on Gaza does not meet Palestinians' demands. Hamas says there is no change in the Israeli stance in the Cairo talks, and earlier we discussed this topic with our guests in our news review program.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the proposal reached during the latest round of Gaza ceasefire talks does not meet the movement's and the Palestinians' demands. Hamas says Israel's position in the negotiations held in Egypt remains stubborn. The movement, however, said that it is still studying the proposal and will inform mediators of its response once it is completely reviewed. Hamas did not set any time frame for its response. The movement says that it wants a comprehensive ceasefire that would see the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and the return of Gazans to their homes. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is a main topic as well. The Cairo talks were attended by delegations from Israel, Hamas, Qatar, and the United States. Muslim Qabsai is a Palestinian scientist and author who joins us from Bethlehem. We also have Booker Ngessa, member of the Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement, who joins us from Nairobi. Welcome to you both. Muslim Qabsai, let me first start with you. Let's have your take on Israel's behavior here when it comes to these talks. First of all, they were prompted by the assassination of those charity workers from the World Kitchen Charity. Brought them out. Israel sent a delegation. And then you have supposedly these talks somewhat in motion, and then you have Israel come out now and say, we're going to attack Rafah, setting a time and date. It doesn't sound like Israel is very serious when it comes to these talks.
They intend to continue the genocide. That's their whole intention. And the Israeli government doesn't really care about its own citizens that are held by Hamas, including high-ranking Israeli military officers. This has been clear all along. It's a question of increasing pressure on Israel now. After 6 months have passed, what are they going to do? Are they going to let the rest of these people die as they continue bombing the areas of Gaza into basically flattening all of Gaza? Or are they going to really make some sort of a deal? My own estimation is that there will be some sort of a deal. It will not be ideal for us as Palestinians, because it will try to save Israel and get Israel from, basically get it out of the mayhem of the trap that they put themselves into Gaza. And that's, to try and get something by political negotiations they didn't get by force.
Booker, why do you think so many are saying that if Israel was to agree to a ceasefire agreement, that would mark a huge defeat for Israel, in particular for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu?
No. First, it's important to realize that the Israel state under the leadership of Netanyahu is not going for negotiation on a point of strength. In fact, they have been forced by their failures in the battlefield to now resort to negotiation or a diplomatic way to cover their failures in the battlefield. It's important that the Zionist leadership has continuously said that the Hamas is a terrorist outfit. Why will they be on the table with the people they consider to be terrorists? It is indeed because of Netanyahu's failure in leadership within the occupied territory, where there is pressure, for the hostages to be released.
Thank you very much for that. Let me thank Mesim Hopsay, a Palestinian scientist and author, and also Booker Ngessa, a member of the Kenya-Palestine Solidarity Movement. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review.
Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has called for an immediate end to Israeli bombings and blockade of Gaza. Raisi made the comment in a message issued on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of the holy fasting month of Ramadan. He stressed to end the months-long genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza as a human and religious responsibility for all Islamic countries. The Iranian president emphasized Tehran's readiness for cooperation with the initiatives of Islamic countries to resolve the humanitarian crisis in the besieged territory, praising worldwide rallies in support of Palestinians on International Quds Day. Raisi called for efforts to use this valuable turnout and end the atrocities in Gaza. London says it will continue selling arms to Israel amid mounting calls for the UK to cancel its arms export licenses to the regime. The British Foreign Minister made the announcement while holding a joint news conference with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Washington, D.C. David Cameron said he reviewed the most recent legal advice on the situation in Gaza, but stressed UK's position on export licenses to Israel will remain unchanged. Last week, over 600 British legal experts signed a letter calling on authorities to halt all arms sales to the Israeli regime. They argued trade could make Britain complicit in ongoing genocide taking place. London has approved over $614 million dollars of weapon sales to Israel since 2015. A number of Google employees have quit the job over the company's cloud contract with Israel. Resignations reportedly come in protests against a project called Nimbus, which is a $1.2 billion contract with the Israeli regime jointly held with Amazon to provide artificial intelligence and cloud computing services. The protest group called No Tech for Apartheid says over 1,000 Amazon and Google employees have backed their efforts to stop this contract with Israel. Last week, a member of the group interrupted a conference promoting the Israeli tech industry and condemned Google's support for the regime. Hatfield fired after his protest during that conference. Project Nimbus reportedly involves Google establishing a secure cloud in occupied territories. It allowed regime to perform large-scale data analysis, AI training, database hosting, and other forms of powerful computing. Recent reports in Israeli media indicate airstrikes being carried out in Gaza are with the support of the AI targeting systems. Moscow says it's opened a criminal case on suspected involvement of Western officials in financing terrorism in Russia. Russian investigative committee said funds received by some U.S. firms in Ukraine in recent years have been used to carry out terrorist acts inside Russian territory. It cited among suspected companies oil and gas firm Burisma, which employs U.S. President's son Hunter Biden in the past. The company says, or the committee says, such finding has been used to eliminate prominent political figures inside and outside the country. Russian investigators are also establishing connections between the perpetrators of terrorist acts and their foreign backers. Russia has accused Ukraine and the West of involvement in last month's attack on a concert hall near Moscow, which left over 144 people dead. Italy's warned about repercussions of attacks on Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, saying risk of creating a new Chernobyl must be averted. Remarks came after several drone strikes hit Russian-held plants, and despite the fact that Italy has been supplying the government in Kiev with several military aid packages. Max Civilli has your story.
Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has released a new statement following Sunday's drone attack on Russian-held Zaporizhzhia power plant in eastern Ukraine. Tajani said the risk of creating a new Chernobyl must be averted and that a free zone around the nuclear plant must be immediately declared. He also advised against fighting in the vicinity of the nuclear plant. A few days ago, during a celebration for the 75th NATO anniversary, Tajani hinted at the possibility of resuming ties with Russia in the future.
We are not at war with Russia. We criticize Moscow's policies, but we are not at war with the Russian people, and we definitely intend to resume relations with the Russian people.
It is the first time Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, the largest in Europe, has been targeted in military action since November 2022. On Tuesday, Russia blamed Ukraine for launching drone attacks on the plant for a third day, but Ukraine denied an involvement.
The Italian Foreign Ministry's position on the nuclear plant attack is very interesting. Rome, for the first time since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, is not just taking the side of Kiev, but it is pragmatically looking at the interests of the whole of Europe, without focusing on who is to blame for the attack.
Also on Tuesday, the European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell reiterated a warning that the UN's atomic watchdog IAEA issued earlier this week. Borrell said the reckless drone attack in Zaporizhzhia increases the risk of a dangerous nuclear accident. Italy has often reaffirmed its unwavering support for Ukraine, despite Russia's warning against such moves. The Italian government has so far approved 6 military support packages to Kiev, inclusive of both lethal and non-lethal equipment and specialized military training activities. Max Civilli, Rome.
That's a wrap for your latest, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Israeli military has restricted the delivery of humanitarian aid to northern Gaza for weeks, and thousands of Palestinian children are currently going without adequate food and medication. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. This news agency has covered the story and tells us more. The United States' controversial decision to pause its funding for the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, earlier this year is reportedly likely to become permanent. Reuters carried out the report on Wednesday, 13th of March, attributing the likelihood to opposition at Congress to the country's financial contribution to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA. UNRWA provides healthcare, education and other vital services to the Palestinian population in Gaza. The agency was accused by Israel in January of having links to a 7th of October operation launched by Gaza Strip's Palestinian resistance movements against the occupying regime, in response to the intensification of Tel Aviv's decades-long crimes against Palestinians. The allegations prompted more than 10 donor countries, including the United States, Germany, the European Union, Canada and Japan, to suspend all financial support of UNRWA. The funding from these countries used to make up the bulk of the funding received by the agency. The collective move against UNRWA came amid mass displacement and approaching all-out famine across Gaza, prompted by an ongoing genocidal war that the Israeli regime has been waging against the coastal sliver in response to the 7th of October surprise operation by the resistance in Gaza. For According to the Reuters report, the bipartisan opposition in Congress to funding UNRWA makes it unlikely the United States will resume regular donations to UNRWA anytime soon, even as countries such as Sweden and Canada have said they will restart their contributions to UNRWA. A supplemental funding bill in the U.S. Congress that includes military aid to Israel and Ukraine contains a provision that would block UNRWA from receiving funds if it becomes law, adding, U.S. President Joe Biden's administration supports the bill. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller told reporters on Tuesday, 13th of March, "We have to plan for the fact that Congress may make that pause permanent." Reuters report added, any new funding would need the support of at least some Republicans in Congress who hold a majority in the House of Representatives. Many have expressed their opposition to UNRWA. It cited a statement by Representative Brian Mast, the Republican chair of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Oversight and Accountability, one of the opponents, as alleging that UNRWA is a front. Brian Mast claimed, it masquerades as a relief organization whilst building the infrastructure to support Hamas. Back in February, the United Nations agency UNRWA said some of its employees had been tortured by the Israeli regime to falsely admit that the agency has ties with Hamas and its retaliatory operation last October. The assertion made in a February report by UNRWA detailed various cases of mistreatment in Israeli detention centers against Palestinians, including several Palestinians who worked for UNRWA. The document said several UNRWA Palestinian staffers had been detained by the Israeli occupation army in Gaza, and that the ill treatment and abuse that said they had experienced include severe physical beatings, waterboarding, and threats of harm to their family members. The report said UNRWA staff members have been subject to threats and coercion by the Israeli authorities whilst in Israeli detention, and pressure to make false statements against the agency, including that the agency has affiliations with Hamas, and that UNRWA staff members took part in the 7th of October 2023 operation. The website of the Mehr News Agency has also covered this same story and tells us more. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has rejected a statement by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, about aid supplies to the Gaza Strip, saying it is a declaration of the international community's failure. The resistance group made the remark on Wednesday, 13th of March, after UNRWA said there is no international will to bring aid into Gaza in light of the widespread and expanding famine in the besieged territory. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said this is a declaration of failure for the international community and the United Nations, and submission to the policies of genocide carried out by the Israeli regime against our Palestinian people. It further called on all active parties to take immediate action to force the Israeli regime to open all land crossings with the Gaza Strip, particularly the Rafah and Kerem Shalom border crossings. The group also emphasized the need to address the security of emergency food supplies, which threatens hundreds of children with death. After the death toll of children due to malnutrition and dehydration reached approximately 30. The Israeli military has restricted the delivery of humanitarian supplies and aid to northern Gaza Strip for weeks, and thousands of Palestinian children are currently going without adequate food and medication. The prevention of aid convoys comes as humanitarian officials have already issued a dire warning stating that unless a ceasefire is implemented and aid is significantly increased in the Gaza Strip, the toll of malnutrition and disease is expected to rise, leading to an alarming loss of lives. Hunger has become the most pressing issue, with myriad problems facing millions of displaced Palestinians in Gaza. With 8 trucks only able to bring in a small fraction of what is needed and distributed unevenly due to chaos in the territory. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based human rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to devastating Israeli war on the territory, and the Israeli regime's method of using starvation and hunger as a weapon of war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor conducted an analytical study on a sample of 1,200 people in the Gaza Strip. A high proportion of those who took part in the study admitted that they ate insufficient amounts of food. 64% admitted that they ate grass. And also many people admitted that they had eaten expired food products.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Brother Ali and Sayyid Abdullah Musa. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So this series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with an analysis on the important points addressed by the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In this new series, we are concerned with the topic humans or human beings in the speeches of the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran. For today, we want to talk about an important topic, and that is the difference, or it's better to say the comparison, as it is between the Western democracy and the Islamic one, as the term that is coined as Mardum Salariye Dini. Roughly, it could be translated as to Islamic democracy or religious democracy, but I think it's better to say a popular religious governance would be a better translation for that. Brother Ali, let's start with you, brother. First of all, differentiate for us between the democracy that is believed in the West and the type of the popular governance that is believed according to the religion of Islam. Also, the leader has explained in his speeches on different occasions.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his immaculate progeny. In Western democracy, which is based on a humanistic worldview, actually the center of the universe, as we said earlier, is human or man. So whatever is going to be looked at can be seen from the perspective or from the eyes of this human towards the universe. So there is no place for the creator of this man who has been created on the scene of earth. So when you look at everything with the glasses of a man towards the universe, so all the rights are going to be given to this person, to this entity, and all the privileges that are existing in this world should be naturally going to this entity.
So this is when we are talking about democracy in the political sense of the word.
Yeah, even in its
because
social
they have
aspect.
Theocracy too, you know.
Yeah,
somehow.
So we shall gradually we shall reach to that point as well. So when you see no place for the creator or God, so this kind of worldview can be formed, and you look at the world from this angle. But in an Islamic worldview, when you have defined man as a creature of God, then you have seen an important role for the creator, and he has been actually created to move towards this creator and to actually to promote and to reach to the perfection for the and the ultimate goal of this perfection is reaching to God and meeting God and visiting God. So when you see that, so there are two totally different worldviews.
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, the man's idea and worldview is very important, but for the sake of God. This is what Islamic worldview actually talks about. It says that man is free, has his own freedom, and his own freedom actually is limited by some values.
Okay.
And values are absolute, not relative.
That's right.
I mean, in comparison to what the Western belief goes.
So is it all right to compare... because when we say the Western democracy, we are comparing a merely political theme from one side, which has position in the political or sociological sciences, with something which is rooted in religion. Is it at all right to compare these two system of values?
Look, your belief, your religious belief actually affects all aspects of your life.
Okay, in the Islam.
Yeah, because in Islam we believe that state and religion are intermingled. So they are always in relation to each other. So this is your religious belief that forms your social activities, social behavior, political behavior, and whatever you do in the society.
So Islam and belief and faith, the umbrella term.
Very true.
That overshadows all the concepts. Okay.
It is the same even in the West. When you are not actually bounding yourself to any faith or any religion, so you don't actually give any right to the values.
So this is
so
the
you look at the values as something as relative.
Okay.
So when they are relative, so your freedom is your freedom has no borders, even to be limited to even while it is violating the rights of others.
That's all right.
So what is the solution? Islam says your freedom is not borderless as it is in the other schools. It can be confined and limited by the values that Islam has defined for you. And this this freedom is gives you more freedom than in the other case. Because in the other case, they just look at it in a social aspect. What do I mean? So, for example, you say that I don't park my car in this area of the street because the, I don't know, society or people in general will be actually bothered or annoyed by this, let's say, taking off the place. But
and also the laws are stronger.
The laws, let's say, okay. A social aspect of it. Yeah. But in Islam, not only the social aspect of the activities, but also the individual and personal aspect of them are looked at and regarded. Look, if you, for example, come in the street as a person naked, so you are actually violating the right of others. But in a Western kind of local, in Western, in other schools, this personal freedom actually does not violate the right of others. Because I like myself, for example, I like to kill myself, to commit suicide. Okay? So, and it is called that this is my personal individual right.
Okay, thank you very much. Said Abdullah, let's get to your brother. But I think at the same time in the religious popular governance, which is believed in Islam, and the leader has addressed so many speeches on this topic, there must be a kind of internal contradiction, and that is how can obedience to the will of the people and obedience to God be combined in a phrase called religious democracy? I mean, could it be combined at all? Because, you know, from one side you have the will of the people, from the other side will of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How these are going to come together?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, I think if we have to discuss democracy,
yes,
looking at it from an Islamic perspective and a secular perspective, the problem is, I think if you want to say there is an Islamic democracy, I think that's just another way of defaming Islam. Because what would happen is, you would do a comparison between a secular system and an Islamic system. So you can say, well, in a secular system, people have more freedom, right? They can do whatever they want. A woman, for example, can take off their hijab.
Yes.
Men can do whatever they want. That's their freedom.
Okay.
So, and then they say, okay, let's compare that to an Islamic freedom. What Islam provides as a freedom in terms of democracy? And we say, well, the reality is we don't have such a thing called democracy in Islam.
Yes.
Islam itself is a system, it's a way of life.
Yes.
Democracy is embedded in that system.
That's right.
So it's not a value by itself that you can look at and say, okay, this is what Islam says in
democracy
terms of...
Democracy in what sense, Ed?
Hmm?
Democracy in what sense?
No, so this is what we're trying to say, is that they're saying, well, our democracy, the secular democracy, is that you can do whatever you want.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they're giving man his freedom, which means, another way, giving him a green card to indulge in his desires.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, Islamically, we say, okay, we don't have an Islamic democracy because yes. that, because you're going to end up comparing it to another democracy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then Islam would look like what? A backward religion. So we're saying, no, Islam, what it does, it's a system of life that has given everyone his rights, has put limitation on everything in life. Now, if you follow such a system, you will get your rights and preserve the right of other people.
Okay.
Now, I want this to is so what I we talk, say so in that kind of democracy.
As a compliment on what respected Sayyid said, I want to say that whatever they call it democracy is not democracy in reality. I mean, in
it's
a
not.
Western look, I mean, school of, in a Western perspective. Why? Because they say that the right of majority of people is going to be valued and respected, right?
Mm.
Okay.
But in reality, it's not the right of all. The right of a limited group of people, specifically the capitalists.
Now, you're talking right. about the elect representatives.
For example,
in terms of, you know, because democracy...
Based on
the
democracy,
world,
they make laws, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So who are those who are making laws?
I know, especially in the U.S. system, you know, democracy and republic are somehow used interchangeably. And when you go to the democracy and say, you can find that political parties are run by the representatives elect. I mean, they are deciding
well,
for
problem.
The people.
That's uh-huh. the problem. I mean, okay. even they themselves, even the secular systems themselves,
yes.
they don't have a defined meaning or definition for democracy itself. Like
yes.
my brother said,
yes, yes.
when it comes to democracy, for example, each system or each country or
yes.
each government will look at democracy from their perspective. For example, yes. whoever is in power will determine what democracy is
mm-hmm.
based on what he thinks is right. So even the secular system, even other countries, they don't have like a democracy that meets the needs of all.
So,
for example,
okay.
let's say
yes.
everyone is free.
Yes.
Now, this kind of freedom is limited to certain countries, for
That's
example.
Right.
Other countries don't have that.
Okay.
When they say, okay, you're free to elect, but we will have to give you our representatives, and you have to like, then which kind of democracy is this? That's not democracy, is it?
So you mean...
So it's like okay. the brother said, it's,
yeah.
it's relative, which means each one can give his own definition of
yes.
democracy
yeah.
and can go with it. So, like I said, so sometimes I think we might just need to...
Rethink.
No,
yes.
so start with
yes.
trying to define what
yes.
democracy is and how is democracy viewed
the problem,
from whose perspective, who sets the
yes.
values of democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then, once you guys
yes.
can figure out what
yes.
what democracy it is to you,
yes.
then come to us
mm-hmm.
and tell us, okay, what is your Islamic version of democracy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we'll give you our answer.
Or it's
yeah.
better to say that there is no Islamic democracy, you know, I mean this term...
Like I said,
this
we don't
concept.
Have such a thing called
yeah.
Islamic democracy.
Yeah.
Like I said, democracy if, in the sense of
yes.
giving people the rights and taking your rights
no.
that's already incorporated in Islam itself as a system.
Very good.
Yes.
And so we don't
right
have to separate things and say, okay, we have a value called democracy, we have a value called voting. No, this is all incorporated in the system itself.
Very true, Sayyid.
That's right.
And this is why Islam gives this right to all the personalities
exactly.
in
so
a society,
anyone who takes
not a certain, let's say, class of people.
Exactly.
So what is
to all?
Okay.
That's why mm-hmm. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran says, if you killed someone,
mm-hmm.
it's as if you have killed the whole world. So
mm-hmm.
the
right,
right of that single
okay.
person is also observed.
Now the question is, now
but
the question
in the
is,
other system or other schools,
yes.
so the right of a certain class of
yeah.
people are observed, not all the people. Can you prove that, for example, a black person is equal to, for example, a white person in America? Who can actually approve this?
These are the movements, you know, Black Lives Matter or other movements looking for their rights. Thank you very much for today's discussion. It was really nice. Sayyid Abdullah Musa, Brother Ali, we are out of time for today's discussion.
Thanks.
We have to cut it over here. Thank you very much. This is very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this program. This is Weir Points. I'm Atta, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstwitter.com/Ian Colour of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel, Instagram page, Colour of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong and right. A world that often lies, cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
نقیم الدین و لا تتفرقوا فیه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Israel and its cult in the United States have used every means to break the spirit of Palestinian defiance and to make Palestine a permanent colony of the Zionist regime. Washington has been a willful partner in the Zionist regime's schemes. The Al-Aqsa storm operation and the resistance it has generated have proven both delusional. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "For many in positions of power and influence, common sense has been supplanted with Zionist mythical ideology and a cultish belief in heroic Israeli leaders, Nobel warriors, and peacemakers. Ever since European Zionists invaded the land of Palestine, Israel has made the indigenous people prisoners and refugees in their own land. Why? Until now, have their colonization and imprisonment received so little attention in the United States? Why has the nation that birthed the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence been willing to dismantle the long-established rules, norms, and standards of international law and risk a wider war in the West Asia region so that the apartheid regime of Israel can complete its goal of physically destroying the indigenous population of Palestine to create a Jewish-only state? Why do individuals in and out of government who have seen in real time the carnage in Gaza continue to defend the indefensible and remain bound to Israel?" The Zionist regime has been waging an ideological war on the truth since it declared itself a state in 1948. It has invested heavily, particularly in the United States, to manufacture a legitimacy it does not have, to embed the myth that Israel is a small yet brave and vulnerable democratic state that deserves U.S. support no matter the cost. Until the October 7th operation by Hamas and other resistance groups, Israel had succeeded in establishing a gallery of cultish faithful in the United States who have effectively controlled the narrative and silenced dissenting voices. If we are to accept the Merriam-Webster dictionary as great devotion to a person, idea, object, movement, or work, then the relationship between the United States and the Zionist regime can accurately be described as cultish. The Zionist regime's mythical narrative has seeped into the thinking and vocabulary of American politicians, academics, Christian ministers, mainstream media, and finally most Americans. Consequently, for many in positions of power and influence, common sense has been supplanted with Zionist mythical ideology and a cultish belief in heroic Zionist leaders, Nobel warriors, and peacemakers. There are no Palestinians in the Israeli story. The mantra of the Zionist regime, a land without people for a people without land, which reflects the belief of Israel's Zionist founders that Palestinians are not people, is a myth held today by most Jewish Israelis and by many in the United States of America. The Zionist regime's advocates are in some way similar to former President Donald Trump's Make America Great Again disciples, who have been referred by some as a cult. Presented with overwhelming evidence of Trump's crimes and grift, they have remained loyal. After hundreds of reports, like that of Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and B'Tselem, documenting the Zionist regime's 76-year history of land theft, apartheid, oppression, torture, and genocide of Palestinians, Israel's loyalists remain steadfast. In 1983, after the condemnation it received for its disastrous invasion of Lebanon in 1982, the Zionist regime stepped up its propaganda campaign. The goal of what came to be known as Hasbara propaganda project was to guarantee that America never wavered in its political, economic, and military support, and to make it next to impossible to critique Israel's actions. The Zionist regime has cynically wielded the cudgel of anti-Semitism to crush criticism. The threat of punishment, of being labeled anti-Semitic, looms over those who dare to question or challenge the ideology. It has been a fatally effective dissuader, an accusation that has destroyed the careers and reputations of many journalists, academics, entertainers, and politicians. Helen Thomas, for example, a respected member of the Washington Press Corps, had her 57-year career end after she publicly questioned U.S. support for the Zionist regime. An onslaught of well-orchestrated denunciations forced her retirement in 2010. Thomas later remarked, "You cannot criticize Israel in this country and survive." Popular host of a weekly MSNBC program, Mehdi Hassan, is a recent example of a journalist punished for making Palestinians visible to a national audience and for daring to criticize the Zionist regime. After 3 years on the air, the cable news network announced in November 2023 that his program would be canceled. Corporate news organizations like MSNBC have come to expect immense pressure if they go outside the level of acceptable discourse regarding Israel. They have therefore eschewed the Palestinian narrative and have become essentially an arm of Tel Aviv's propaganda network. Israeli Hasbara has also framed Palestinian resistance against military occupation as terrorism. The association of terrorism with Palestinians, Muslims, and the West Asia region has created an unhealthy climate of indifference and dispassion among many Americans, an indifference that has made the televised genocide of Palestinians acceptable. Just another news event.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli forces killed over 150 Palestinians and injured 60 others in the last 24 hours as the death toll for regime's genocide in Gaza tops 33,300. The Iranian president says ending